operate at the assigned frequency of 91.7 megahertz. We have an effective radiated power of 120 watts. WNEC is a non-commercial education station. The WNEC offices are located on the third floor of the Simon Center on the New England College campus. Portions of today's broadcast have been transcribed and pre-recorded. The DJ staff and management of WNEC want to wish you a pleasant day. Okay, guys. So I am live on the air in my school's radio station, WNEC. As I said previously, you can listen to us at 91.7 WNEC FM. We also have a website. Not sure what that is right now. But one of my class projects is to do a little podcast. So it was a little bit hard to decide what I wanted to do as a podcast topic. But I decided that while I was live on air over the radio, that I would also be live on YouTube, just to, you know, have a video record of it and just chill, right? So this podcast is going to be on a few things. I'm going to talk about journalism, investigative journalism. I'm also going to talk about the split between North and South Korea. I'm going to talk about the split in politics between Republicans and Democrats. I'm also going to interview a couple of guests, some teachers here at my school, one of which does some investigative work in reuniting families with their lost loved ones. And it's actually a little bit sad because they're reuniting them with, you know, their dead relatives who, you know, died in North Korea or just a bunch of different things, right? And so I have so many questions, so many topics that I want to, you know, dive into and bridge on. And I hope that you guys will come along with me for this journey and won't be too bored because it's going to be a lot of facts. I'm doing a lot of research for this, and the hours I do into research are probably only going to take a couple minutes here. But I think we should dive in. So today, what I'm really going to be talking about is journalism. Now, I have multiple sources, some being Britannica, some being NFIhistory.com, and then just a bunch of different other sources as well as my teachers and what they teach in class and all of my notes that I have here with me. So if it feels like I'm reading, I'm sorry. I want to make sure that I have everything correct and that I'm not spreading false information. And if I do, forgive me. So let's start. Today's question and topic is, what is journalism and why do we need journalists or investigative journalism? So let's start with the definition. Journalism is the collection, preparation, and distribution of news and related commentary and feature materials through such print and electronic media as newspapers, magazines, books, blogs, webcasts, podcasts, social networking, and social media sites, and email, as well as through radio, motion pictures, and television. That definition was taken from Britannica. So let's get into the history of journalism for a bit. So journalism started with newspapers, and as technology advanced, so did journalism, right? It went through many different shifts. So we had print, then, which is newspapers, then we had radio. I think in between radio and print was telegraphs, or I think that's how you say it, forgive me. And then after radio, we had TV, so the rise of television. And then after television, we have the internet because we're in the 21st century. Wow. But yeah, so it went through many different shifts. So the earliest known product was the Octoderna, I think that's how it's said. And that dated back to 59 BCE. And that was from ancient Rome. And it was literally just a news sheet. That's just what it was. And then they had different things throughout history for different countries. For people to get news. So in China, they had the bao, or otherwise known as report. That was during the Tang Dynasty, and it was only for government officials, right? So then we also had regularly published newspapers that appeared in German cities in about 1609, right? And then from there, the first English newspaper, the Weekly News, came out in 1622, and then the Daily Courant, 1702. Right. Newspapers were used by those in power. They were used for censorship, taxes, and a lot of times in churches to preach whatever the priest at that time wanted to teach. It wasn't until people became literate that they started to realize that not everything that was being preached in the churches was actually written in the Bible. Right. Back in those times, Sorry, I need to collect my thoughts. They're running too fast. Back in those times, since not everyone was literate and most people spoke English, many of the tablets and things of that nature were written in Latin, which is now a dead language. But as literacy spread and became more popular, everything started to be written in English so that more people would be able to read them and it would be available to more people. I love that. Okay. The spread of literacy happened around the 18th century. Magazines started in the 17th century as learned journals, and they were opinion-forming articles, which nowadays in class I'm learning are also called editorials. We had two popular news magazines at that time, the Tatler from 1709 to 1711, and then the Spectator from 1711 to 1712, right? So that's a bit on journalism in general. The four things that I want to point out that are like very important to journalism would be technology. Mass media made printing faster, right? Then you had public education. Everyone could read. Everyone was being taught how to, you know, read, and they were literate. Next thing we have, number three, is the First Amendment. Government couldn't control the source of the information, and the working class could create their own newspaper, right? This was around the 19th century, by the way, guys. And then number four, professional journalist. Profit. Seven stories equals seven reporters. They found out if they could print faster and they could share these stories, they can make money, right? And this is why journalism has become a big boom today. Everybody wants to have all the information that they can. They want to stay well-informed. So there's a balance between giving people what they want and giving people what they should know and should hear in the news. We've learned through many, many different news stories that we all love drama. Like, we watch reality TV shows. We love listening to, like, fights and arguments. We love a good drama, a good story. And that's why headlines are the way they are. They don't have to be a full sentence to capture your attention. They just have to be something interesting or dramatic, and then we'll tune in like that. Our attention span is snapped. Not everybody's going to sit down for an hour-long podcast. I hope you sit down for this one. I don't know if it's going to be an hour, but we'll see. We'll see what we can do. They're going to get longer in length. This is my first podcast, obviously. So there's a bit of workshopping that I need to do. And so, yeah. My God. Okay. So we have that. We just went through the history of journalism, right? Everybody wants to see what they want to see. Everybody wants to hear something dramatic, something big. They don't want to be bored by the news or the facts, the cold hard truths 24/7, which is why in news stories, they need to give us all the relevant information as quick as possible so that we don't tune out. In class, we're learning, this is for print, but we're learning that the most newsworthy info goes at the top of this inverted pyramid, the who, what, when, where, how, and why. Then you have all the important details in the middle, in the body. And then you have other general info, you know, background info that just goes towards the end of the story. You start with your headlines, your lead sentence. That's all the facts right there summarized in a nice, short, sweet thing. Then you have the body with your important details. And then for newspaper, I'm not quite sure what it's called, but for broadcast, they call it the tag, which is the end of the story, which is where your other general info goes. So we've learned that newspaper started it all, and then it went to radio, then it went to television, then it went to the internet, now in modern day. All of these forms of news sharing and broadcasting, I should say, are still alive and well, but newspaper is dying because we have so many different forms of getting the news and getting it out there, and it's quicker. One of the biggest problems with newspapers is by the time that it is printed and sent out, you're reading yesterday's news, right? Radio is a little bit quicker. You can get it there. Television is also quicker. It's daily. And then online as well. Yes, it's typed, but it can be uploaded at a press of a button. So newspaper is slowly but surely going out of style. Hardly anybody uses it anymore. And one of the biggest flaws is because you are getting data a day late, which is kind of sad. I feel like a lot of kids grow up watching like their parents read the newspaper, or even now like their grandparents reading the newspaper. And a lot of times we try to imitate our our elders in those things. And it's just one way that like brought people together, I guess. Like you would sit there and you'd wait to read the cartoons after your parents were finished with it. And sadly, it's going away. But we do have other things that have, you know, taken over. I wrote an essay based on the early 1900s, the golden age of television, radio, and cinema. So I'm not going to read all of it, but I am going to pinpoint things that I think are important in it. So in 1884, a system was created that sent images through wires via spinning disc, right? It was the electronic telescope. So this was created in 1884, right? Early 1900s. Well, I wouldn't say that's the early 1900s, but you guys get the point. 1884, okay? Woo, yeah, we're there. Then a Scottish engineer, John Baird, gave the very first demonstration of true television in 1927, before the 50 scientists in central London could, right? He went on to form a television development company, which achieved the first transatlantic television transmission and the first transmission to a ship located in the mid-Atlantic. In 1929, all electronic television system was shown at a convention of radio engineers. By 1940, radio dominated the airwaves, right? But TVs were starting to be used in the U.S. So radios, when they were created, they were a big thing, right? You got to hear people's voices for the first time. It was transmitted everywhere. You could get news faster than just a newspaper. It was a big thing. So imagine the shock when television started to come out. Everybody was losing their minds, right? This is a new thing. We could see people as well as hear them. And this creation is what really changed the way journalism is today, in my opinion, probably in others, but don't take my word for it. I'm not an expert. But I think the real turning point for television, and I think a lot of people would agree with this point, was the 1960 presidential election of John F. Kennedy and Nixon, right? John F. Kennedy was involved with this television business, right? And so he wanted it televised. And when the presidential election became televised, people are like, well, when I heard Nixon on the radio, I thought that he won. I thought he just had it. But then when they saw Kennedy, they were like, wait, looking at him, like seeing him, he won, right? Everyone, I don't know if it's just because he was cute back then or if it was actually just the way he carried himself, his demeanor, his confidence that showed versus his opponent. But this really changed the way journalism is because we finally got to see people, right? We got to see what they were doing, how they carried themselves, and we could kind of pick apart their body language, which is another thing I learned in Intro to Communication. Body language is a big sign of communications. People can talk, obviously, via words, face-to-face, but face-to-face is so good because you can read people's body language. Body language can say things that your mouth isn't saying. You know what I mean? So I could be here smiling in your face, just having a conversation, and if I'm smiling, you obviously think I'm happy. But if you can't hear me over the phone, then you can interpret whatever I say however you want to interpret it. But body language can differentiate, because if my tone was off and my body is showing a different reaction, you could be like, okay, we're cool, right? But 1960, presidential election, right? This is the first time the American people were able to see the candidates rather than just hear them. This led to people being able to read the body language and facial expressions as well as the intonation of the voice. And this had a big impact on the form of medium people chose to use, which is why people started leaving radio and going to television. So from then on, television was the new medium and radio was put on the back burner. At the same time, a new form of moving pictures was also being developed. In 1981, Thomas Edison presented the idea of moving pictures to the public, and the Lumiere brothers introduced a cinematography in 1895. By 1910, the Nickelodeon theaters solidified film's status as a popular entertainment medium in the U.S. Okay, silent films became a thing of the past once the jazz singer came out in 1927 and introduced sound into films. So that's a little bit more of the history of television and how it shifted, right, from before 1960. And then black and white films were made up until the 1950s. And around 1915, it was the golden age of Hollywood. During this time, studios controlled every aspect of filmmaking. But this declined after World War II. So overall, we've come a long way technologically. We've started with a kaleidoscope and telescopes, and we turned it into projections and the big movie screens we see now, right? So that's a little bit of history of radio, television, and newspaper. So I want to talk about my thoughts, my opinions, and things of that sort. One thing I learned in my intro to journalism class is that while this was happening, after the 1960s presidential debates were published, while they were happening and a little bit after, ABC News, which was not doing too well back in the day, decided that they were going to film and broadcast a debate between Gore Vidal and William Buckley. And it was a lot. From watching it in class, they were just going at each other. And it just got to the point where it shifted from, you know, politics and their views on certain stances and their presidential candidates. And they just started taking hits at each other. And that is a good representation of how people shift from, you know, right versus left in politics and how it can bring out the worst in people. And I'm going to have a separate episode on politics and the divide between Republicans and Democrats and things like that. But it was a spectacle and people live for the spectacle. We live for the drama, right? Reality TV shows became popular. And I think the way that we now broadcast debates and things of that nature now came from ABC News broadcasting Gore Vidal and William Buckley, and then between John F. Kennedy and Robert Nixon being filmed for their first debate. I think that that was a big turning point, and it kind of shaped the way we still do things today. We love seeing our presidential candidates debate, right? Trump versus Biden, Trump versus Kamala. Who else had very good discourse? I think that those are the main ones that people are talking about still to this day. I think those were the like biggest debates, not just because they're the most recent ones, but just because they were so big and a lot of things were taken out of context. Well, not out of context, but I mean, a lot of memes started from said debates. A lot of memes, a lot of controversy, a lot of uproar, a lot of people arguing back and forth against each other. Which I think is very interesting. We live for the drama. We live for the spectacle. We live to pick sides. We love having somebody who's in the right and somebody who's in the wrong. We love having the villain and the hero. These are just like story tropes that have gone on for generations in our life, especially in politics, which if you're like me and you don't like politics, I'm sorry. There's going to be a lot of talk about it. If you do love politics, you're welcome. I'm not too happy about it, but it's okay. We do what we do. This whole podcast is to break down a little bit more. This whole podcast is something that I thought would be fun to do. And it's a fun, different way of learning. I have control in like researching everything and putting everything together because my teachers trust us. And of course, they're going to be guiding me along the way. But it's really just me manning the ship with some guidance. And I have so many questions, so many ideas, and a lot of things that I want to talk about. So I hope that constructive criticism can be given and that you guys are following along and that I'm not too boring and that I'm not too annoying. But yeah, so we've talked a little bit about journalism and the history of that. Let's talk a bit about investigative journalism. Okay, so it has many different definitions, but I think I want to read you guys the Cambridge Dictionary definition of investigative journalism. Investigative journalism is a type of journalism that tries to discover information of public interest that someone is trying to hide. So conspiracy is a popular subject for investigative journalism. We love watching conspiracy theories. As I said, we love having the spectacle. We love the drama of it all. And conspiracy theorists do this very good in a way that they phrase many questions and they untie and undiscover like mysteries. And they piece things together in a way that normal people typically don't. And in doing this, they create something new and exciting for people to speculate or fight over whether it's true or not, you know, which I think is very interesting. Sorry. But I feel like that's what this podcast is going to be, investigative journalism. I'm going to take a deep dive into the split between what happened between North and South Korea and the war that is still ongoing currently, but is on a truce. At a standstill. And I feel that the split there can also mimic the split that we have here in America between Democrats and Republicans. I feel that there is a lot that divides people, and it's an interesting topic that I want to share with you guys, I guess, my research and my findings, because I'm so hyped to do this big, big project. So every week from 11:30 to 3, or maybe a little bit before 3. It depends on how long I can make these go, how long I can just yap at everyone. Pause. I'm on the radio, so we have to do a PSA. This year, Smokey Bear turns 80 years old, and he shared his birthday wish with us. My wish is for everyone to practice wildfire safety, because only you can prevent wildfires. So let's all make sure Smokey's wish comes true. Learn his wildfire prevention tips at SmokeyBear.com. Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. If I do that, I'm not a crazy person. I'm just doing the PSAs to follow rules and regulations here. Okay, I'm back. Back to our regularly scheduled podcast. I think it's an interesting topic that we can learn more about and learn about the differences in other countries as well as our own. Speaking of the differences between other countries and our own, I would like to talk a little bit about freedom of speech. So freedom of speech is something that America takes much pride in. It's in our First Amendment. It's our First Amendment right, which, as I said earlier, is one of the foundations of press. The government can't control every single source of information that you get, and you're allowed to have private owned news places, whether that be newspapers, online or broadcast news television streams. The government can't restrict everything that you say. Now, there is a difference between hate speech and protected speech. That's the word. See, I'm learning. Big brain. There's a difference between hate speech and protected speech. Hate speech are things that you just cannot say. The First Amendment right does not protect these things. So hate speech would be threats, acts of physical violence, trying to incite people to violence. Just very outlandish things that you can say, right? That is not protected speech. Protected speech is things that you can say. You are allowed to criticize the American government as long as you are not threatening said government, right? So you can pretty much say and do whatever you would like on news channels as long as it is within those guidelines. So, we have many different examples of freedom of speech and freedom of speech being violated by either the people or the government themselves, right? Not just here in America, but also in other countries. And to tie into my interest in North and South Korea, in North Korea, their freedom of speech is prohibited. Here, we are able to search up things at the drop of a hat online, whether it regards to our nudes or just anything we want to know in general. Their government and their internet and everything is so restricted in North Korea that the only things that are put out for them to see and read are what the government puts out. They have to sneak around to find out what's going on outside of their country, and if caught, can be punished. One punishment is getting thrown into a concentration camp, which we know that North Korea has and is trying to keep on, you know, the down low. They don't want too much getting out about their country, which is another reason that people can be punished. If somebody comes from North Korea on here on official business and decides to leak information about North Korea, when they go back, them and their family are punished for a couple generations, thrown in a camp. And one thing that inspired me to make this podcast is I took 3 classes now, well, one I'm still in, but Intro to Communications, Freedom of Speech, and Storytelling as Research, which talked, we read a whole book about somebody who escaped from a camp in North Korea and his life and his struggle integrating. And we're going to take a trip to South Korea, and we're going to visit the DMV, which is on the border between North and South Korea, that is heavily monitored. And we're going to talk to some refugees who have escaped from North Korea and are currently living in South Korea. And as I go through this whole process, I want to answer questions, and I have many questions that I want to start researching and I want to share with you guys, which is why I'm doing this whole podcast and why I'm doing all this work. And I hope you guys enjoy it. I really do, because I'm just here yapping, and I apologize for that. I know I could be annoying, but it's thoughts that I want to share. And I hope somebody listens to my thoughts and like actually is like, yeah, I have similar thoughts or wants to study more about this topic, because there's not much awareness about it. I feel like different countries, they have news, and yes, we learn about things going on in different places, but it's still mainly centered on America, right? It's still centered on their country. And in North Korea, not much gets out. And it's interesting that it's a big issue that's not just happening in North Korea. It's just one of like the main places we know about it going on. Through research and like my freedom of speech classes, I learned that there are a lot of countries that you wouldn't think had limited freedom of speech, but do. And it was just interesting. Let's see. Sorry, I'm finding all my documents right now. So besides North Korea, you have Syria, Venezuela, and Yemen, which have strict controls on freedom of speech, right? I also know that China has some form of restrictions on their freedom of speech. I think that in their case, it's with their internet and what the citizens are able... Oh, sorry, babes. You can't see me. What their people are able to see, what their people are able to post and control, which in America, we don't quite have that. But what I think is interesting is since Trump's current election and us taking the TikTok ban so serious, it was actually very funny, because what ended up happening is we lost TikTok for a full 24 hours. And when TikTok did come back at first, it wasn't quite the same for everyone. A lot of people were reporting that their lives were missing, or that the algorithm was off and their For You page wasn't the way it was. There was this whole debate because Ben and Jerry's was posting protests, not just protests here in the United States about the TikTok ban, but in other countries. Italy, for example, had a protest about them taking away TikTok, because TikTok is a place where people share news, where they share information, and a lot of people are learning and engaging in different things. And a lot of people felt that taking away that app was taking away some of our freedom of expression and some of our freedom of speech. After TikTok came back the next day, because the ban was suspended temporarily, we also saw that Ben and Jerry's page wasn't quite the same, because Ben and Jerry's, as I said, was posting all of those protests on their page and basically like speak out against the man type vibe. Some grocery stores have locked up Ben and Jerry's ice cream, and whether that has any correlation to what they were posting on TikTok when things that were political were being taken off, I don't know if it has any correlation, but a lot of people are suspecting that it has correlation, which is another thing that I want to investigate. So I feel like investigative journalism ties very well into this podcast, based on those questions as well. We're going to have another break for Radio Tings. You're listening to 91.7 WNEC-FM, New England College Radio, Henniker, New Hampshire. Bada bing, bada boom. But I think that these are important questions that I want to find out the answer to, and I hope you guys want to find out the answer to. Let's see. I've talked about journalism. I've talked about investigative journalism. I've talked a bit about what this podcast is. I have notes. Let's refer to them. That's what they are here for. Okay, I think that that will be the end of the first broadcast for today. I hope you guys enjoy this podcast, and I hope those listening over the radio also enjoy this podcast. If you want to tune into my other radio show, I will be continuing that shortly after this podcast is ended at 91.7 WNEC-FM on the radio. And I'll try and find the link for the online website. But I hope you guys enjoyed my talks on what is journalism, a little bit of the history of it, and what is investigative journalism, and just my overview. Thank you for watching. Bye.